volunteers.
Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, we continue our series on retirement planning and moves you should make in your 30s. And our guest today is Mrs. Marilyn Chappelle of Exceeds Expectations. So, good morning, Marilyn. Welcome back to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning.
So, can you again tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yes. So, my name is Marilyn Chappell. I am the founder, executive director of Exceeds Expectations Incorporated. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we inspire and cultivate financial stability and personal growth.
So, I know you have a long history in banking and finance. That also goes along with that, that kind of gave you the vision for what you do.
Absolutely. So I have been in the banking industry for over 13 years and worked my way from a teller up to a vice president of a credit union. And so, yes, I have seen so much in the banking industry, but most importantly, I've seen a great need in financial education.
And there was that credit union, as you may not talk about it, but they had about $50 million worth of assets, and they are one of the smaller credit unions, but they deal with a lot of city employees and those who live within Jackson County. So it's one of those where anybody can be a member as long as you reside within the county or if you possibly work for the city.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, but Exceeds Expectations does other things. What are some of the other things that you do that you may help in the community to prepare for financial literacy and help those who may be down on their luck a little bit?
Absolutely. So we do multiple things, just like you stated. We do one-on-ones for personal finance coaching for individuals, as well as we do for couples, married couples. And so then we also go into the prisons. We go into the prisons in, such as the one in Cameron, which is Western Missouri Correctional Center. And we have an 8-week curriculum-based program, financial stability program, that we teach those men there. And so we actually work with the men less than 12 months of being released. So we are preparing them for success and, you know, becoming a successful person, you know, once they get out of prison. And so we also go into the women's prison in Topeka. We also collaborate with multiple organizations in the Kansas City area, and we bring that financial piece to their program. And once again, it is a curriculum-based program for 8 weeks.
So you also work with some of the local churches or nonprofits and help with their congregations, because I know it's not just about helping one part of the community, is about helping all parts of the community.
Absolutely. It's the whole community. We all make up our community. And the one thing that we pride ourselves in is that, you know, we're able to tailor it to whatever the needs are for that program, for the community, for that family household. Most importantly, we like to start off with financial psychology because everybody needs it. We all need to really face, you know, how did we even learn about money and managing money and being able to uproot those, the stinking thinking, the bad behaviors, and really be able to replant a strong financial foundation for our families, our churches, and, you know, just for our homes.
So we're going to kind of piggyback a little bit. Last week we talked about things you should do from in your 20s, from 20 to 29, and moves you should make. And this week we're going to talk about moves you should make from your 30s, in your 30s, from 30 to 39. And but one of those things that you just brought up is that financial mindset. Because a lot of us get our values from our parents. We see how they save money. That influences how we save money. And you know, I got a lot of my values from my grandmother, a lot of them from my parents. But you have to look at some things they may do, maybe time for a little bit of a change.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I always like to share this in my classes. And I always say that, you know, growing up, you know, you had a roof over your head, you had a bed, you know, to sleep in, you had food to eat. And, you know, so our needs were being met. And even though we may have been looking around, and, you know, when we look at our parents or, you know, extended family members and how they manage money and use money and we saw what they spent their money on, but yet our needs were still being met. And so as we grow older, sometimes we take on some of those same things that we see. And so, you know, and they may have been bad behaviors, but we didn't really understand it because our needs were met. So as we get older, we think we can take on those same behaviors because it's normal to you, right? And so you take on those same behaviors expecting that your needs will still be met. But if it's a bad behavior, for instance, like gambling, you know, may be a bad behavior if you're excessive, right? And so if you're gambling and now you find that you cannot pay your bills, that is a bad behavior to where you got to figure out how you can get that, how you can change that into to where it's not affecting your finances.
Well, also things like shopping to excess. I mean, it's not about not picking on men or women.
Absolutely.
But it's about making that budget and sticking,
yes,
to that budget. Because one thing that we talked about last week, and that people who are looking at retirement, your moves that you make in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, and your 50s determine your retirement. And if you will be able to retire, or if you may retire and have to get a part-time job, or if you may be one of those people who works until the day that they die.
That's right. And you are so right. I mean, you know, we can spend excessively in all areas. Everybody has their thing, right? But one thing you have to do is you have to be able to recognize it. And the moment that you're able to acknowledge it and recognize it, that's the first step to change. And so, yes, the budget is key. It's key in finances, period, because, you know, it's your truth. It's your truth. And we talked about this last week about, you know, one way that you can look at your truth is pull your last month's bank statement and start from there. And now let's create a budget. Let's sacrifice in some areas that you find yourself excessively spending. So then that way you can make room to be able to plan for your retirement.
So as we talked last week about the coffee, about, you know, eating out for lunch, those are different things that, you know, if you're spending $5 a day on coffee, then over a decade, you had $10,000 worth of coffee in some cases. The question you have to ask yourself was that coffee worth it, especially when it comes to your retirement? So we had a couple of questions from last week. I'm going to ask those in a second. But Marilyn, those in their 30s may have student loan debt. How should they financially plan for student loan debt? And a lot of millennials right now are saying they can't do anything because student loan debt is so crushing, and it impacts their ability to be able to buy a house and have the American dream.
Yeah, so one thing that I've really seen with student loan debt when I was working in the banking industry is a lot of times when they were looking to get a home or personal loans or a car, a lot of times on their credit report, it would show up as multiple lenders. And so even though they were making one payment or maybe even two payments, they would come up on their credit report as like five different trade lines of payments. And so when a lender is looking to come up with what the approval will be, and they're really calculating their debt to income, that can make their debt to income look like it's out of whack. And so what I always like to encourage people is to pull your credit report. So we know that once a year you can pull your credit report for free once a year and see how your student loan is reporting to your credit report. If you see it reporting multiple times with the minimum monthly payments, then that's the time to look at consolidating them into one, because now you're reducing the overall monthly payments that is reporting to your credit bureau, and now you're actually is reporting. Well, actually, it just gets your debt to income in line. So the reporting of your student loans is usually what sends your debt to income out of whack when it's reporting multiple times.
But that also may be an area, as we talk about finding the money, that you may have saved $20, $30, $40 a month that, okay, I can put half of that toward retirement. I can put half of that toward a savings or emergency savings account to be able to do that. And so now you're putting yourself just on a little bit better of a position.
Absolutely.
And one of the questions we had last week was about student loans and what happens to them on your death. Federal student loans are not passed to your family or state after you die. What will happen is that someone will have to provide proof of death to the student loan services so to have the debt discharged after the borrower's death. But the rules for private student loans can be different. So, and this information came from the website studentloanhero.com. But also what parents, they want to turn around and help their children, and they co-sign or sign for all these student loans. But what happens also is that if they did them while they were married, then one parent passes away, you could leave the remaining spouse liable for all those student loans because it could go against the estate. So that's one thing that parents need to look at when they're signing on for student loans, because now you've lost that one income and you may be in your 60s or 70s and you're not carrying $500,000 to $750,000 worth of insurance anymore because you essentially built up all these assets. So now you may have to look at selling some of those assets in order to be able to pay down on those student loans. So my thing is to think and read the bottom line before you turn around and sign for student loans.
That's good. Yeah.
So Marilyn, why is it important to set financial goals? Because this seems to be the heart of this matter, because the quality of your life you have now determines the quality of the retirement that you will have later. So why is it important to set those financial goals?
Setting financial goals is very important because it's easy to get distracted. And so it's good to know where you're going and how you're going to get there. And writing it down makes it real. And so definitely, what I love about 2020 is it's the beginning of a new decade. So set your goals according to a decade and then break them down, 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 years. And so now you're focusing on, 1 year, which would be 2020. What are you looking to accomplish this year? To get you to your ultimate goal. One thing that we do in our household is we come up with a family vision. And so that family vision is one that won't change. The vision won't change, but the process on how to get there can. And so we like to break that down as our mission. And so that mission, we know that it will change, probably every year. And so we sit down at the beginning of the year and we write those goals down and we check in, So I like to use the SMART goals tool. And so if you never have heard of the SMART goals tool, a lot of people use that in the workplace, or, you can even use it for finances. I use it with our financial coaching all the time. And so the S is being specific about your intentions or about your goal. And then the M is measurable. How are you going to measure it? And like how many times are you going to check in? And so A is it attainable? R is it relevant? And then T is time-based. So without a date, then it's just a wish, right? And so, add that date to your goals and then, go back and revisit it.
So people want to have, they want to go on vacations, they want to go to concerts, go to different things around town. And how difficult can it be to attend those events that you may want to save for a down payment on a house or any other large expenditures if you don't have a budget?
It's going to be very hard. So, you know, there's a quote, if you plan, if you don't plan, then you plan to fail. And so, or it goes, if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. And so, yeah, you definitely need a budget. So you can do all those things, but just plan it out. Budget it in, plan it out. And so that goes back to the goals that you set, and then you plan them out according to the dates that you want to achieve them.
And usually people who are in their 30s have now started to earn a little bit more money, and they're looking at trying to buy that house, and they've gotten that first taste of plastic.
Yes.
And, you know, you look at, wow, I can go buy this. But you're buying now, and you're paying tomorrow, but also you're mortgaging part of your future at 18%. To be able to have that ability to be able to do those type of things, you know, and the attitude of not how much is it, but how much are the monthly payments, that can get you into trouble, and you're then again sucking away part of your retirement, your ability to put money back for retirement, because you had to have that new plasma TV, that new living room set, you know, that new car. And that if you begin to look at where your money's going, then you always know where your money went.
Absolutely.
And I've read the book, The Millionaire Next Door, and one of the things that the average millionaire does not buy a new car, they will go out and buy a quality car, and they'll usually buy it from 1 to 2 years old, but know that it has a track history. They'll know how often it's going to break down, what it's going to cost them when it breaks down, but they also buy a car that they can drive for about 10 years.
Yes, and you know what? And that is so, that's so true, and it's very wise. And I think most of really what we should do when we buy our cars is, you know, keep up the maintenance. You know, so oftentimes that's one of the things that, you know, people let drop to the wayside. And, you know, without keeping up the maintenance on your car, you're not going to have it too long, right? But if you keep up the maintenance, you know, every 3 months or, you know, whatever the date is, you know, that they put on your car for oil changes, if they tell you that you need to get it fully serviced, you know, every year or couple of years, do what they tell you. And my father always told me is take it to the dealership where the maker of your car. Don't take it anywhere else because they understand the vehicle. And so, and that's what we do. And I hold on to my cars for a long time.
I have a friend of mine who just got a new car right after Christmas, but she had the car and her friends kidded her. She had the car before for 14 years.
Oh, yeah.
And she said she was essentially going to drive it until I stopped driving it. Yeah. You know, because now car payments can go 60, 72 months, which means you have paid for a car 6 to 7 years.
And which is very long.
Yeah. So you, but you don't want to be in a position at the end of it where as soon as I pay this one off, it's time for me to go buy another one. Mm-hmm. So, and there's a lot of things that really people need to take advantage to think about. Excuse me, especially when you are in your 30s because you're now getting, you've gotten that raise at work, you've maybe went up a step or two, mm-hmm. and now you think, well, I need to have a car to match that status symbol. But how much is that car going to cost you in maintenance? How much is that car going to cost you in gas? How much are you going to have to do that you have to do? My Gwen, our phone screener, just said her car is 17 years old. And she has 245,000 miles on it. And that's what you have to look at. So Because that car, buying that car, can be a part of your retirement dollars going elsewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And also, one thing that a lot of people fail to think about when they go buy a car is how much gas is it going to drink? Because if you do a lot of running and you buy one of the, you buy a car that drinks a lot of gas, you know, I cried because I had a Chevy Impala and I gave it to my son, but it was an 03, but I was still, I could fill the tank up and drive half the month.
Those are good cars. We have one too.
because it would get 500 miles to the tank.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, all right, I can go run around town, do all the different things that I want to do, but I don't have to worry about filling up unless only twice a month. And I used to go to St. Louis. I could go to St. Louis and essentially back on the same tank of gas.
A really good car, yeah.
Because those are things that you need to look at. It may not be the most stylish car, but I'm looking at it from getting me from point A to point B. Yeah. And also, it didn't have to go to the shop a whole lot.
Absolutely.
And they were cars that you would, that you know that you would get 300,000 miles out of. And all you had to do was change the oil, change the tires, and every now and then something.
Yep. You're so right. We had an 06 Impala, and we ended up passing it down to our daughter when she went to college. And so, and we just did that about 3 years ago. And so, yeah, we hold on to cars because they're good cars. You keep, you know, you keep your car clean. You keep the maintenance up on them. They're good. Gas mileage, they get good gas mileage, like you stated. Just keep it up. I mean, and just hold on to it because they are good cars to pass down. And I think that's what we got to start looking at is, you know, when we're purchasing our vehicles, you know, add that into your decade plan. Do you see yourself holding on to that vehicle for your child that is about to turn 16? You know, a lot of times we'll go out and we'll buy new cars, and now you have a new car payment, which is more money going out of your household. But, you know, then you have other options out there where, you know, some people are selling, you know, nice cars, you know, one owner or one car owner, and they're selling, you know, one of their older vehicles. Those are the great vehicles to buy for your child that's about to turn 16.
And especially as a lot of seniors stop driving when they get in their 70s and 80s, but they still got a, they've got a car that may have 40,000 miles on it, maybe 9 years old, but it's got 40,000 miles on it. It's barely broken in. So it's one of those things that you start to look at other options, and that may make a great vehicle for somebody who's trying to get out of debt in that situation.
Absolutely.
So,
and I want to add to this because, see, I know this stuff now that I'm older, and I know these are good recommendations. These are, you know, wise words, right? But when I was younger, I did things backward. I didn't really do things the wise way when it came to finances. So my parents gave me a car to drive. They paid the insurance, and they said, you can, you know, we'll do this all the way through your college. But then me, you know, I was working full time. And so now I wanted my own car. I wasn't thinking about how much my parents were saving me. I was one of those teens that was thinking, oh, I want my own car. I'm making money. And now I'm creating a bill for myself. And so, yeah, I went and got that car. But now I have a bill at the age of, I think I was like 19. So now I have my own car with a car payment. But now when you begin to start making bills for yourself, it makes it that much greater that you have to work. And you have to work to pay bills, right? Instead of saving most of your money, because now you have a portion, at least $200 going, you know, to your bills that you're creating. And with that, I ended up having to pay my own insurance. So now I created another bill. So my parents said, you get your own car, you got to pay your own insurance.
And a lot of millennials right now, especially those in there from, we'll say about 26 to maybe some cases even 40, you're still, they're back staying at home because they can't afford to live on their own, to get an apartment. So that, going back to what we were talking about as budgets, how important is it to build that budget, but also how often should you revise and look at that budget?
You should definitely look at your budget periodically. So, you know, I like to say all the time. So once a month, you should be creating your budget. But, you know, life happens. Unexpected things happen. So sometimes you might have to readjust in different categories. And so, you know, weekly, you know, just to make sure that you guys, that you're on course. And if it's just yourself, then, you know, it's a little easier. But then when you have, you know, a spouse and you guys are communicating about finances and about spending, you definitely want to touch base weekly and maybe multiple times in that week, because like I said, things happen.
So Marilyn, a lot of people don't know how to start to build a budget. Oh, you know, what, there's some apps out there like NerdWallet that can help you build a budget. But what's the first thing that you should establish when you're building a budget?
The first thing that you should establish is definitely knowing how much you have coming in. You know, now that direct deposit is set up, a lot of times people don't really know the exact amount that they have deposited. You know, you ask them, you know, what is their income? They're like, okay, hold on just a second, let me pull it up. You know, but you should be able to ramble that off. And so know how much you have coming in. So from your employer, you know, if you have child support coming in, know how much that is. But and if you have other streams of income, know how much that is and add that all up. So know the income that you have coming in. But then the second thing is know how much you have going out. You know, what are all of your expenses? And so I like to break those expenses down by category. So, you know, from utilities to rent to entertainment, meals out. You know, there's all these different categories. And actually, you can go on to exceedsexpectations.org or letsexceed.org, and I actually have a free budget worksheet right there for you, and it has all those different categories listed out. So definitely print that off. But yeah, you got to know your income, you got to know how much you have going out, and then you need to know if you have a surplus or if you're in the negative, and so, or the deficit. And so from there, that's when, you know, changes can be made.
So for a lot of those in the 30s may just be barely making it, or in some cases they're robbing Peter this month to pay Paul next month. What's the first step that they should look at trying to do to get themselves to that particular point where they are at least balanced and begin to be putting, even if it's $10 a month away to a retirement, what can they do at that particular point to get themselves back to balance?
Absolutely. So one thing that they can definitely do is first ask for help. You know, it's okay to ask for help. You know, ask a financial coach such as myself, you know, or somebody that that is a more knowledgeable other in finances, somebody you look up to that is doing right by their money. And that's how that's what you want to follow. You know, ask for help. And so the second thing that they can do is pull your last bank statements and see how much you have going out in each category, and see where a lot of your extra spending is being spent, or money is being spent. And then, you know, another way is, you know, you can really just identify just by, you know, sitting down thinking, you know, what is some of the things that I normally spend money on? So it goes back to coffee, you know, it goes back to maybe candy, lunch, meals out during, you know, when you're at work and you have lunch break, it's easy to go somewhere and buy lunch. And so those are the areas that you can look at cutting back for your extra money.
I know one of the things for me when I was in the military was, there was the soda machine down the hall. You would have that soda once or twice a day. And then I kind of had the aha moment when I was going to college. And I said, wait a minute, I'm spending $1.50 on soda per day. I can go to the store and get a six pack for what I was spending. So I started, when every time I started going shopping, because we had a refrigerator work, yeah, I would just get a six pack. I get 3 or 4 six packs, and I would spend way less to be able to do that. So it was kind of a thing. And then what I started doing was I started taking that 75 cents back then, it's $1.50 now, that I would have spent, and put it into a container jar. at the end of the year, I had $600 worth of quarters, nickels, dimes, because I was putting that money that I was going to save. I mean, I would have spent back. And I was like, that funded my emergency fund 1 year just from those doing little things like that. So, but we're going to take a short break. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station. This is Cowtown Conversations, and I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And we're talking about financial moves to make in your 30s to ensure that when you're able to retire, you've got a quality of retirement that you want. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break.
Johnson County Meals on Wheels is looking for some volunteers. If you are interested, please contact them at 913-715-8895. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Did you know your business or organization could be sponsoring this episode of Cowtown Conversations? Learn more at kkfi.org/marketing.
Hello, this is Joseph Jackson, host of Cowtown Conversations. We're taking a short break, but you still have time to get your call in, so give us a call on our studio line, 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. And have a great Cowtown Conversations day.
Okay.
And we're back. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today our guest is Ms. Marilyn Chappelle of Exceeds Expectations, and we're talking about moves to make in your 30s. So as we're going to stay on budgeting, just a couple more questions because it's so important. How important is it to break down your spending and necessities, things that you must do, like pay your rent, pay your utilities, things that you want to do, but also debt repayment? I mean, a lot of people just look at this is what I've got going in, but they don't worry about the categories of where it's going out.
Absolutely. And so when it comes to budgeting, I like to list down when we're in the category of expenses, I like to list down all of the fixed expenses. So those are your auto payment, your rent or your mortgage. It may be your phone bill. It may not change unless you're using more data than you should. But, you know, I always list those fixed expenses where the payments don't change first, and then go to the variable expenses. So those are like your utilities. Those are like your entertainment, your gas, all of that. And so once you list those and you figure out, you know, once you subtract your expenses from your income, when you have money left over, I then like to go back and now come up with a debt repayment plan. And sometimes it's not that easy. Sometimes people are in a deficit and we're having to go back to their variables and look at different options on how we can reduce those to get it to where they're manageable, and there might be a little bit of sacrifices just so we can make room for the debt repayment plan. Because the debt repayment plan is key, is crucial to your credit. And I truly believe that anything that you borrow, you must pay back. And so coming up with a plan to, you know, get that debt paid down by a certain period of time, and that's something to determine how soon do you want to see that paid off, and then that'll help you decide how often or how much you should put toward that debt.
But also, why is it important, though, to keep your debt levels to no more than 20% to 25%? Because we may start to exceed that, but then when we want to go buy a house, and we may be told, well, our debt levels are too high. But also there's a retirement cost there, because I go from paying 13-14% to I could be paying 18-25%, but I'm paying more because I can make the payments, but I'm carrying more debt.
Yeah. And so from a lender perspective, I'm going to give it to you from a lender perspective. So from a lender perspective, you know, debt to income is very important. And one thing that a lender would look at would be what is reporting on the credit bureau. And so what reports on the credit bureau is going to be like your mortgage, your auto, your credit card payments, your personal loans that reports to the credit bureau. And so they look at that and they determine your debt ratio from what's reported on the credit bureau. But one thing that we forget is that even if you get an approval based off of what they stated, we have to remember that there are some things that we pay that's not reported to the credit bureau, which means that such as your utilities, you know, the gas that you're putting in your car. There's so many other variables that goes into your debt, you know, going out, you know, expenses going out that could really change the way that you change your finances, you know. And so it's just really, really key to keep that in consideration, keep that debt low, so then that way it is manageable. Because once it becomes unmanageable, then it's a downward spiral, and then you're looking to borrow more money and more money and more money.
One of the things that, you know, the information you sent me, and I've did some research, is that you should pay off your non-mortgage debt during your 30s that you may have accumulated during your 20s. Why is that important?
It is so important because in your 20s, you might have done some crazy stuff in your 20s, but as we get older, we have more unexpected or just life issues, life events, right? So, you know, in your 30s, you're looking at, you know, getting married. You're looking at buying a home. You know, you're looking at doing all those things, which is going to cost money. And so if you have other debts out there that you have to pay off, it makes it harder to be able to, you know, to attain some of those goals. And so in your early 30s, definitely look to start paying off those non-mortgage debts and, you know, come up with that debt repayment plan. And so that's going to mean that you're going to have to put more money in savings and put more money towards your debt.
So paying off, there's multiple strategies in looking at paying off debt. You've got the debt snowball, the debt avalanche, debt consolidation loans, and at last chance you have debt management plans. You know, we'll quickly talk about each one. Debt snowball, that's when you focus on paying off the smallest debt first, and then once you pay off that one, you put that money toward the next one. The debt avalanche is a little bit different. You pay off your debt with the highest interest rate first while paying the minimums on the other. Then once you get that highest interest rate one paid off, then you go to the next highest interest rate one. And then debt consolidation is where you may go to the bank and you may say, I need to pay off these three credit cards. But the great part about that is that you know that consolidation is only going to be for X number of months.
Yes. And I actually like that option when you consolidate them into one payment, because most of the time you're able to reduce your overall monthly payments. So now you have extra money that you can put towards savings or towards your retirement, whether that's a, you know, your 401k IRA. But another thing that I like about that is that it becomes a fixed rate rather than a
variable rate.
And so what I mean by that is that if you have multiple credit cards that you're looking to consolidate, it's going to be beneficial for you because you're going to pay less interest in the long run. And like you stated, that you will have that paid off by a certain number of months, and you sign a contract saying that you have it paid off by this date. And so it gives you the opportunity, if you decide that you want to pay more than the minimum monthly payment, that it all goes toward principal. And so now you can get it paid down quicker than you would by just, you know, continuing to pay each credit card individually. Now, the key is if you consolidate your credit cards into one monthly payment by the way of a personal loan with a fixed rate, it's not to go back out and go use those credit cards again, because now you've now created a problem for yourself, but now you're paying on that credit card twice. So put those cards away. Whatever you consolidate, you don't use those cards while you're paying off that consolidation.
Because then you put yourself back in the same, you don't put yourself back in the same hole. You put yourself into a deeper hole.
Yes.
And that's about the time when you start looking at, I need to pay for everything on a cash basis, so that, because a lot of people don't understand that you start spending your retirement income in your 20s. And I was talking to a friend of mine who was listening and said, you know, I really didn't start to think about my retirement until my 50s. So now I'm so far behind, and that's where I'm particularly at. Now, the debt management plan is that if you're in such a situation that then there are a lot of consumer credit, other organizations out there that will help you to be able to call and negotiate with your lenders and help. But as you said, it's about looking at planning, calling and asking, getting information, and if you're in too deep, calling and asking for help.
Absolutely. And there was a Gallup poll that was recently taken, and it says 28% of Americans don't start investing until their 30s. And that's over one in four people. And so that is so true. A lot of times, you know, we don't begin to start thinking about retirement planning or investing until our, you know, later 30s.
And then there's so many different things. So I know it's in your 20s, it's recommended that you have 1 to 2 months worth of emergency funds. Mm-hmm. But as you get into your 30s, they recommend that you have 2 to 3 months worth of emergency funds. What is the rationale for that?
Well, once again, you know, different stages of life, different decades of life, you know, we have more life events. You know, in our 20s, we're going to school, and it's usually just ourselves until we get married. In our 30s, you know, we're married. We may have some children. We may have bought a home. You know, so all those, you know, there's just different stages, you know, and then as we get older, there's just, you know, more added on to our plates.
So as your salary begins to increase in your 30s, should you then start to look at what your retirement contributions are and ensure that you're maxing out what your company says that you should be able to put into your 401k, but also looking at maxing out your Roth IRA?
Absolutely. So, yes, the best order to save for retirement is, one, you know, contribute to your 401k up to your company's match. And so, you know, like this year, actually, January is usually a time where, you know, you take that second look to see if you're where you want to be, to see if you've met the company's match yet, or, you know, increase it to where you're getting the max company match. And then the second thing is max out your IRA to the annual contribution limit. And so, you know, beginning 2020, the max limit is $7,000. And so a good way to try to meet that $7,000 is divided by 12, you know, and then from there, how many times do you get paid, you know, in a month? Is it weekly, biweekly? But you figure out how much you can set aside to where you can max out that limit. And even if you cannot start out by maxing out that limit, start where you are. So if that means that it's only $30 every paycheck, then you start with $30. Start where you're at, but then once again, revisit your budget periodically and see where your if you have extra money coming in. And then if you do find that, you know, through promotions or through raises that you have extra money, then one, look at your 401k. Then two, look at how much more you can put into your IRA.
So one thing that we haven't talked about, we know we all have auto insurance, but as we begin to get into our 30s, what are the types of insurance should we look at having?
Well, we definitely should also have a rental or mortgage insurance that is on our property. But then most importantly, life insurance. Life insurance is so important to have. And And I'll even admit, you know, with life insurance, I started late. And a lot of times we start late because we don't know, we don't understand, or we think it's going to be so much money. And it's not. It's not. And so in our 30s, we definitely should be looking at life insurance for where we are to cover our assets, to cover our families, wherever you are in life at that time. I always like to ask the question, would you want your loved one's lifestyle, your family's lifestyle to change if you were to pass away? And if the answer is no, then you definitely want life insurance on yourself as well as your spouse. And then it's always good to have some on your kids, you know, as well, once you begin to have children. And so you can definitely look for life insurance. Maybe you can look at it with your financial institution. They offer it. You can look at it with whoever holds your auto insurance or your mortgage insurance. You know, they offer it. And then also your investment advisors, they also have different life insurance options as well. But most importantly, you need to talk to someone about life insurance and get it.
And what people don't understand is that life insurance is, it's cheaper the earlier you buy it, but the longer you wait, the more expensive it gets. So then again, you're eating into income that you could have put away for retirement, because in your 20s and 30s, you can get, if you want to go with term life, you can get that one that's locked in, and it'll be a lot cheaper than it will be if you start to buy it in your 40s and 50s. And the thing about life insurance, I was taking a class, and the individual who was teaching it said, you know, he had an individual who worked at Ford Motor Company, and he went to work one day and had a major heart attack and passed away. But they had, about 6 months earlier, they had looked at everything to see where he, to ensure that he had everything. So when he passed away, not only did they have the Ford life insurance, he had his own other exterior outside of that, and they had been investing, and the spouse was able to keep the house, keep the same type. They actually paid off the house and had a lot of money left over. And life insurance is not for you. It's for those that you leave behind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so you made a good point about when he passed away, he had enough to where the spouse could pay off the mortgage. And that's what's key. So, you know, look at the things around you. What holds a note on it? You would definitely want to make sure that you have enough life insurance to pay off the things that still hold a note if you were to pass away. But you also want to leave a little something for your family, because just what if, you know, your spouse is working and she has to be off, or he has to be off for a couple of months because they're needing to adjust, you know? Sometimes you just, you know, you just got to adjust, you know. And so will that person be able to afford to be able to grieve and adjust to the transition of what's going on?
And we talked about it last week that we couldn't know the number, and I did the research. They say that you should carry 10 times your annual salary. So if you make $50,000 a year, then you need a minimum of $500,000 a year worth, $500,000 of life insurance, so that you can do what you need to do. So, and we've got a caller on line one. Matt, yeah. Hello, Matt, are you there?
Yeah, I'm enjoying the show today.
Thank you. So what's your comment or question, and what part of town are you calling from?
I'm in Waldo.
Okay, and what's your comment or question from Melvin?
Well, I'm in my 60s now, but I remember back when I was in my 30s that you're talking about now. And the thing that worked for me, you kind of mentioned it there for a little while, was putting money into your IRA if the company has like a matching program or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to encourage people to start that immediately. You know, the younger you are, the longer it has to accumulate. And don't say, oh, I can put that off, or maybe I can save a couple hundred dollars now and I'll ramp it up later. But if you can set that money aside before you even put it into your budget and just let it sit there and accumulate, that'll just do wonders for you.
Oh, thank you so much for that comment, Matt. So there you're getting. You're getting it from somebody who's been there, who says, this is the things that I did, you know, that helped them get to where they want to be now. So it's that planning that you did way in your 30s that's going to help you now when you start looking at retiring.
Absolutely.
I've got an example. Would you rather be given $10 million today or be given a penny today that doubles every day for a month?
And I would take the penny because it's going to end up more on day 30 than that $10 million
right.
is going to be.
I know, but yeah, you're absolutely right. But until you do the math, you don't really realize how fast things accumulate over time.
Exactly, so
I'd say start early.
Time buy your money.
I agree.
So
yes.
Thank you so much, Matt.
All right. Thanks.
And so, I would also encourage that, you know, where you are right now, if you go to bankrate.com, I know I shared this last week, but if you go to bankrate.com, and I know Edward Jones has a calculator as well, but if you go there and you pull up the investment calculator and put in your age and then the amount that you're looking to start investing into your IRA, and then, you know, put your retirement age, maybe 62, it'll tell you how much you can pretty much earn if you start where you're at. And so you can adjust those, you know, those ages as well as the amount, but that will help you be able to visually see the calculations on how much you can earn, you know, over time, if you just start now with what you have.
So as we talked a little bit about insurance, that you need to have 10 times the amount. But if you're single, Marilyn, if you're single with no children, do you need that 10 times the amount of that insurance? Or is it something that you can maybe, that's a category where you can reduce back on?
Yeah, you can. That's a category you can reduce back on if you're single with no children. But yes. So, yeah, you can cut back on it.
One thing we haven't thought about, for those who may be self-employed, should they purchase disability insurance income?
Yes. Yes. That as well as life insurance and insurance to cover even your, business to keep it going. And so that's one thing for business owners is, you know, how does it look? How does your business look if you were no longer to be able to run it, if you were no longer alive? Do you have a succession plan?
So... But also during the 30s, is it a time for you to begin to look at, if you have children, you may not have children, putting something back in a state-sponsored educational plan so that you're not looking at all these student loans when they get to that. Even if you only put back $20, $25 a month, and you've got 18 years for it to grow before that child is going to need that money.
Absolutely. So there are different savings plans for your children's college. And so you can look into it with your financial institutions, or you can just, you know, go online to see what other companies offer, like 529 plans. Those are really good plans for saving for kids' college. I do want to go back to, even for business owners, retirement account for business owners could be like a SEP IRA. So that's something that you definitely want to look into if you own a business.
And one thing that people in the 30s may not think about is, and we're just going to talk about it today, but we're going to elaborate more on next week, is beginning to have an estate plan.
Yes.
So the basics of having an estate plan that you should at that point in time at least have a will or a living trust.
Absolutely. You definitely want to have a written document on where you wish for your distributions to be distributed, you know, from property to just any assets that you have. You want to have it written down, and so your family members or your loved ones know exactly how you wanted it allocated.
And the rules have changed for this year, and we'll talk about it next week as we talk about that. Because it used to be you could take those distributions over a lifetime, but now they say you have to take those distributions over 10 years. So something things people to start looking at. So, Marilyn, if somebody would like to get a hold of you, can you give out your contact information? You've given out your website, but can you give that out again?
Yes. Yeah, so you can go to letsexceed.org. and it would take you right to Exceeds Expectations Incorporated's website. And you can also contact me at Marilyn@ExceedsExpectations.org, and you can contact me by phone at 816-286-0108.
So thank you for being our guest today, Marilyn. We'll be back next week to talk about moves to make in your 40s. But we never in Cowtown Conversations without a Community Minute. It's going to be some bad weather coming this weekend with some rain and some snow, so you may want to start getting out today and getting some of those things that you're going to need to make sure you've got enough food, because the best advice is to stay indoors if you don't have to go out. Casey Wolf is going to be out this weekend because it's going to be Red Friday tomorrow. The Chiefs are going to be playing on Saturday. So Casey Wolf is going to be at the Sunfresh located at 3110 Prospect Saturday, January 11th from noon to 2, right before the big playoff game. So he's going to be taking pictures. Also, jobs. The Kansas City Census is going to be hiring for people to do the census. So for more information on job with the census, go to 2020census.gov. The Internal Revenue Service is hiring for seasonal and long-term employment positions in Kansas City. So for more information, call 816-499-4900. And the 3rd District meeting will be held this Monday, January 13th at 6:30 at the Gray Kleist Community Center located at 1600 John Buck O'Neill Way. So for Cowtown Conversations, join us next week as we talk about moves to make in your 40s. And have a great day and stay tuned for My Place with Larry J.